Hey there, and welcome to The Play is the Thing, Podcast 3, The Seven Key Elements of Narrative. My name is Andy Black, and I'm a playwright. This podcast series is being offered in conjunction with the Play Submissions Helper website. My website is www.andrewblackplaywright.com. The Play Submissions Helper website is www.playsubmissionshelper.com. This podcast is going to introduce seven key elements of narrative and review how they're important for the playwright to know about and use in writing a play. Before we get into the content, however, I want to take care of a few administrative details. Each of the podcasts has a learning aid which can be downloaded from the Play Submissions Helper website in PDF form. The learning aid that goes with this podcast is called Podcast 3, Seven Key Elements of Narrative. You'll be able to follow along with some of the key points by looking at this handout, if you like. Second, who am I? Well, my name is Andy Black, and I am a playwright. I wrote my first play, a romantic comedy, with my collaborator Patricia Milton in 2001. That play was the finalist in a national playwriting contest in 2002 and was produced for the first time in 2003. It was a romantic comedy called Porn Yesterday, which has now been produced across the country. I eventually went back to graduate school and got an MFA in playwriting from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And I moved back to Indianapolis, where I grew up, and I now teach playwriting at the Indiana Writers Center in Indianapolis. My plays have been produced throughout the United States. I love playwriting. I love teaching playwriting, and I actually really enjoy doing these podcasts as well. So if you want more information about who I am and what I do, go to my website, www.andrewblackplaywright.com. And I want to give a big shout out to the series sponsor, Play Submissions Helper. PSH is a community of more than 1,700 playwrights, and hopefully you're all part of that community. The goal is to help playwrights realize their dream of getting their plays produced by saving them hours of time searching for theaters to submit their work to. For just $6.99 a month, the Play Submissions Helper website provides a compendium of hundreds of theaters that are accepting play submissions. It's a great system for a busy playwright who wants to focus on the craft of writing and still get the work out there. So you can sign up now by going to playsubmissionshelper.com. So if you've already printed out your handout and you're following along, I'll direct you to page 3, where there is an agenda or an overview of the topics I'm going to be covering in this podcast. So before I get into the agenda, I want to say that this particular podcast is an overview of seven key elements of narrative. Each of these elements is going to be the subject of its own podcast later in this series. So if some of your questions about a specific element aren't answered in this podcast, they may be in a future podcast, so you can stay tuned. So let's look at our agenda for this podcast. Again, it's page 3 of the handout. And the way this podcast is structured, we're going to be looking at each of the seven key elements in turn. So they're listed on that page. The first question I'm going to answer is more of a general question. How do I use the seven key elements? Kind of a why are they important to know about for the playwright section. And then the first key element is the protagonist. The second key element is the major dramatic question or the goal. The third and the fourth key elements actually go together, so I'm treating them as one, the old world order and the new world order. The fifth key element is the inciting incident. Six is rising action, complications, or plot. And then seven is crisis, perception shift, and climax. And then at the end of the podcast, I'm going to give you some assignments for you to try your hand at applying the concepts that I covered in this podcast. So the way that the handout for the podcast has been put together, there is a narrative content section which describes the seven elements in sequence, and I'm going to be talking through that content. There is also a graphic which shows how the seven elements might interrelate in a pictorial format. So I'm going to actually be referring primarily to that graphic as we talk together today. So if you want to have that handy to look at, that's great. That you might find that helpful. You can shift back and forth from the narrative to the graphic if you like, or if you're listening in a situation where you can't actually refer to anything at all, that's fine. I'll talk you through it and do my best to make sure you understand the concepts. So let's get started. How do you, as a playwright, use the seven key elements of narrative? People have been telling stories for some time now. So if storytelling is considered an art form, it's probably one of the oldest. Since storytelling has been around for a while, there are certain what I would call best practices for the form. And storytellers who want to tell an effective story don't actually have to reinvent the wheel if they want to tell it right or have the most meaningful impact on their audience. And seven key elements of effective storytelling are included in this discussion, which most theorists consider to be the best practices of effective storytelling. So these seven key elements actually apply to all kinds of narrative: a movie, a novel, short stories, a poem which has a narrative, and so on. But they have particular power when they're applied to playwriting for reasons that I'm going to explain as we go along. Now, just so you'll know, there's no rules or requirements for art or specifically for playwriting. So as a writer, you're free to pick and choose from among these elements as you want to, as you see fit. A writer may choose not to apply these elements for the purposes of writing a specific play. Of course, that's just fine. The writer may decide not to use them as an experiment to see what happens. But I would be concerned if a writer didn't use them simply because he or she did not know about them, or because he or she did not understand how to apply them in a given situation. Because if the writer is in that predicament, then he or she still has a few things to learn. And perhaps this podcast is going to shed light on a few of those darker areas in the playwright's personal experience. I'm going to quote my mentor at Ohio University, Charles Smith, who says that talent in playwriting is actually a combination of structure and voice. Voice is actually quite hard, if not impossible, to teach. Structure, on the other hand, can be learned, and that's what this podcast is all about. Element number one is the protagonist, or the hero. A protagonist is the main character, the central or primary personal figure of a literary, theatrical, cinematic, or musical narrative, around whom the events of the narrative's plot revolve, and with whom the audience is intended to share the most empathy. The protagonist is the character that the audience member identifies with. Now, the reason this is so significant, particularly in the theater, is that an effective play lulls the audience member into kind of a dream state. And if you've had that experience in the theater, you're going to know exactly what you're talking about. If it's done right, the audience member will literally forget that he or she is in a theater and have an out-of-body experience, which could take them anywhere. They could be watching the Salem witch trials. They could be in the far reaches of outer space. They could be back in prehistoric times. The protagonist is the character through whose consciousness the audience member enters the dream world that is the play. A strong protagonist whose point of view is built and maintained over the course of the play will have this kind of hypnotic effect on the audience, which is why it's so important in general and particularly important for an effective play in a theater. Now, there's a few typical characteristics of an effective protagonist. It's the character who drives the action of the play. It's a character, the character who has the strongest want or need, a character with a strong goal. This character typically makes a final key decision of the narrative. The character is frequently a fish out of water, someone who doesn't belong or is struggling to get in somewhere. The ending of the play is driven by what we learn about this character and typically involves some kind of conclusion that the audience can come to about this character and the character's experience in the narrative. Frequently, it's the character that the play begins and ends with. And the character typically has to deal with conflicts or complications in the pursuit of the goal that this character has set for him or herself, or it could be even itself. In some cases, the protagonist could be an inanimate object or an animal, a plant. So those are, that's a little bit about the protagonist. If you want to look at the graphic in the handout, you'll see that the protagonist is represented by a five-pointed star. And you'll see the star representing the protagonist on the left-hand side of the page. And of course, the protagonist is also at the right-hand side of that page because the story of the play is the protagonist's journey through some kind of experience. And when I was a graduate student, I will say this, that when I would pitch an idea, or when the playwrights in general in my program were asked to pitch an idea, the very first question that our mentor would ask us is, who is the protagonist? And so we had to be able to explain who the protagonist was, whose consciousness was the audience going to experience the story through. And it had better be the character that had the most at stake. It had better be the character who was in the most danger or the most jeopardy. Because if it wasn't that character, we were going to be challenged as to whether or not we actually had the right person as the protagonist of our play. So that's always something to think about, who is the protagonist. And I'm also going to say that when you think about the great works of the theater, most of them have really, really, really strong, clear protagonists. So you're talking about Oedipus Rex, you're talking about Hamlet, you're talking about Hedda Gabler, you're talking about Walter Lee in Raisin in the Sun. So the plays that stand out in people's minds are the plays that have really strong protagonists. So one of the questions that an effective playwright asks at the beginning of the creation of a story is, who is going to be my protagonist? And the answer that the playwright comes up with to that question is going to determine, to a certain extent, the effectiveness of the narrative that the playwright creates. Now, as I said, this, I don't want to go into too much detail here, because successive podcasts are going to go into more detail on each of these different elements of narrative. So the next podcast is going to be all about the protagonist. So if you have questions, or if I've whetted your appetite to know more, stay tuned, because there will be another podcast which is going to give you more information about the first element of narrative. So let's go to the second element of narrative, the major dramatic question, or the goal. Audiences are typically engaged in the play when the playwright creates questions that they have to struggle to answer. People are drawn to questions, and questions engage the human mind. So the overarching question of any effective narrative is almost always, how is the protagonist going to find peace of mind? Something has happened, and it's usually the inciting incident, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, which has disarranged the peace of mind of the hero. And the hero was on a quest to restore balance and to secure peace of mind. And the major dramatic question, the overarching dramatic question, is, how will the protagonist find peace of mind? And one of the things that makes this question so compelling is, I think this is one of the questions of life, if not the question of life. People are constantly wondering, how can I find peace of mind? How can I be happy? How can I have serenity in my life? And as they watch the play, they are drawn to a protagonist who is struggling with those same questions that they are struggling with. And the reason that they are interested in the play is because they want to know how the protagonist deals with that question, because it might actually give them some insight into how they can deal with the same question in their own lives. So that is the overarching question of any effective narrative. How is the hero going to find peace of mind? So in an effective narrative, the protagonist needs something to achieve peace of mind. That becomes the goal of the protagonist. And so when you think about the great works of literature, it's fairly easy to identify the protagonist and their goal. Will Oedipus be able to discover what is causing the plague that has befallen his kingdom? Will Macbeth become king? Will Walter Lee buy a liquor store and in so doing become the man that he really desires to be. So the goal of the protagonist is something that the protagonist feels that he, she, or it needs in order to achieve peace of mind. And thus, the dramatic question of the narrative becomes, will the protagonist achieve that goal, which is intended to restore balance and provide peace of mind? So in a theatrical narrative, the goal usually has two elements. There is a tactical question and a thematic question. And in order to illustrate this, I'm actually going to use the movie version of The Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland as Dorothy, because that's a narrative that almost everyone is familiar with. Even though it's a movie and it's not a play, it illustrates the points very well. So as I say, in a narrative, the goal usually has two elements, a tactical question and a thematic question. So the overarching frame for The Wizard of Oz is that Dorothy needs peace of mind. She's unhappy and disarranged at the beginning of the narrative, and her unhappiness is compounded exponentially when a tornado carries her away to an unfamiliar and strange place where it appears that a witch wants to kill her. So Dorothy decides that she's going to get peace of mind by going back to Kansas. So her goal has two elements. There's the tactical question, is Dorothy going to be able to get back to Kansas? And then the larger thematic question is, is she going to find home? Is she going to be able to find a place where she feels loved and cared for? So assuming that the protagonist in a theatrical narrative has a goal, which is the focus of the major dramatic question of the play, there are actually some typical characteristics of really strong major dramatic questions. First of all, they're usually associated with the protagonist. So in The Wizard of Oz, the question is, will Dorothy, our protagonist, ever get back to Kansas? Major dramatic questions usually have one of three answers: yes, no, or we will never know. And in the case of The Wizard of Oz, the answer is yes, Dorothy does get back to Kansas. And in fact, yes, she does find peace of mind when she gets back there. Most, if not all, of the images in the narrative should contribute or be related in some way to the major dramatic question. So the major dramatic question provides a unifying force throughout the narrative. The dramatic question could usually be expressed along the lines of, will the protagonist achieve his or her goal? So this is statement, of course, assumes that the protagonist has a goal, which can serve as the major dramatic question. Effective theatrical goals are usually positive. The protagonist is trying to make something happen, or to get something, to do something, or to accomplish something. Keeping something from happening, or keeping things the way they are passive goals, not active goals, and they don't function theatrically nearly as well as positive goals do. To a certain extent, the major dramatic question provides a kind of roadmap for the audience. It lets them know what they're waiting for, when the play is going to be over, and then when they get to get up and go home. And in some ways, going to the theater is a bit like a road trip. When you sit down in your seat and the lights go out, part of you wants to know, okay, how long is this going to last? When am I going to get to go to the bathroom? And then when am I going to get to go home at the end of it? And there's a way that in order to deal with the audience's anxiety, the playwright needs to create a clear roadmap through the piece to help the audience feel comfortable as they watch the play. And the major dramatic question frames the story in a way that allows the audience psychological comfort. As a result, the major dramatic question has to be answered at the right time. If the major dramatic question is answered too early, then the rest of the play will actually seem anticlimactic. In some cases, I will say the major dramatic question gets answered earlier in the play, and then it introduces a second, more compelling major dramatic question to take its place. So there may actually be sequential major dramatic questions, but usually these multiple major dramatic questions are tied together by a common thematic idea. And the thematic idea is usually, will the protagonist find peace of mind? So that is element number two, the major dramatic question and the goal, which work hand in hand. So if you'll take the graphic that I provided in your handout one more time, you can see how I've arranged these elements in that graphic. So you have the protagonist on the left and on the right, represented by the star. And if you look in the bottom of that handout, you'll see major dramatic question. So the major dramatic question is located close to the beginning of the play. It should be introduced early in the play. And if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the question, how can I find peace of mind? And under it is conceptual goal and onstage manifestation. So in the upper right-hand corner, we see the elements that make up the goal of the protagonist. The peace of mind, some kind of a conceptual goal. In Dorothy's case, the conceptual goal is, where can I find a place that I feel loved and accepted? And then the onstage manifestation, which in Dorothy's case is getting back to Kansas. So that's how the elements of narrative have been arranged on in that graphic. So we're going to go to the next elements, elements 3 and 4. And if you'll stay with the graphic for just a moment, you'll see on the left-hand side of the graphic, under the protagonist's star, it says Old World Order. And under on the right-hand side of the graphic, under the protagonist's star, it says New World Order. So these are actually two different elements, elements 3 and 4. But for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to treat them as a single element because they really do work hand in hand. So, Old World Order is sometimes called stasis, depending on the theorist that you follow. So, the Old World Order defines the world before the occurrence of the intrusion or the inciting incident, which I'm going to talk about here in just a minute. So, plays typically begin with exposition. Exposition is dialogue, description, information. It gives the audience the background of the characters and what would be called the present situation at the beginning of the play, or the Old World Order. The information or the exposition contains clues about the Old World Order, and it answers certain questions for the audience, like what is the world of the play like? What kind of a play are we watching? The Old World Order establishes the rules of the play, and it actually defines the protagonist's experience of the universe before the intrusion, before his or her journey begins. The New World Order, on the other hand, establishes what the world of the play is like after the major dramatic question has been answered. The New World Order appears after the crisis has been resolved. The difference between the Old World Order and the New World Order offers information about the theme of the play. So the New World Order is usually compared or contrasted with the Old World Order. The New World Order may look radically different than the Old World Order. The New World Order may look the same as the Old World Order, but the events of the play have caused the audience's perception of that Old World Order to be different. So let's go back to our teaching example of The Wizard of Oz. In the Old World Order, Dorothy is irritable, restless, and discontented. She feels misunderstood. No one pays any attention to her. She's under attack by Miss Gulch. So she's in a world of hurt, very unhappy. All she wants to do is get over the rainbow. So after her events in Oz, when she returns to Kansas, she experiences the reality there completely differently. She's surrounded by love. People are nurturing her, taking care of her, attending to her. She does, in fact, feel loved. And the statement that sums up the spirit of the narrative is, if I ever go looking for my heart's desire again, I'll never go looking any further than my own backyard. So the spirit of the narrative is that there's no place like home, and that all the things that we need to make us happy in our lives are basically in our own backyard. We just need to know how to look at them. So over the course of the narrative, Dorothy's experience of her world is shifted. And in the New World Order, she has an insight or an idea about the world that she didn't have before, which there's a lot more in Kansas than she could see before. And of course, the idea for the audience is, maybe there are things that are going on in your own world that, if you just looked at them in the right way, would provide you with peace of mind and would allow you to feel safe and secure and loved in your own natural habitat, the way that Dorothy experiences her reality at the end of the narrative of The Wizard of Oz. So what allows us to have that experience, which is basically revealing the theme of the work, are those elements of the old world order and the new world order and how they work together in storytelling to help us understand the world of the protagonist and how it changes over the course of the narrative. So those are elements 3 and 4, old and new world order. Now, element number 5, the inciting incident, I've anticipated or foreshadowed several times. And if you want to look at your graphic, in the lower left-hand corner, you'll see a little lightning bolt, which is the intrusion or the initiating incident. So it happens early in the play, early in the narrative, and it introduces the major dramatic question. So the inciting incident, as I've said, is sometimes called the intrusion. It usually kicks off the action of the play. And the inciting incident or the intrusion is important for several reasons. It's the thing that disturbs the protagonist's peace of mind. It's the thing that disarranges them. In The Wizard of Oz, of course, it's the tornado. So Dorothy being taken away from her home is the thing that disturbs or disarranges. She's already a little disturbed as it is, but the tornado takes it kind of to the ultimate extent for her. The intrusion or the inciting incident causes the protagonist to take action toward a goal of some kind. It causes the audience to ask a question as well. The intrusion violates or upsets the old world order, so it's the thing that upsets the protagonist's apple cart. It answers the question, why here, why now? And it answers the question, why is today different than any other day in the life of the protagonist that the story begins here? And it lets us know that something unique has happened to the protagonist that is beginning a journey for that individual. In a full-length play, the inciting incident should have happened by page 10. And in a 10-minute play, it's usually on the first page, if you can get it there, very close to it. I'm going to say that the intrusion or the inciting incident is usually quite exciting. And if we don't see it on the stage, the playwright should have a very good reason for leaving it out of the play. And as I mentioned before, with the great works of the theater, you don't have to look very hard to find the inciting incident or the intrusion. In Hamlet, it's the appearance of the ghost. Hamlet sees his dead father's ghost. And the dead father's ghost informs Hamlet that he was killed by the uncle and that he's asking Hamlet to kill his uncle to revenge or avenge his death. In Macbeth, it's the appearance of the witches who tell Macbeth that he is to be named king. That's the inciting incident. In Raisin in the Sun, the inciting incident is the inheritance. The younger family is going to be receiving an inheritance. And so it's the inheritance or the receipt of this money, which introduces the major dramatic question for Walter Lee. Will I be able to buy the liquor store with the money that I'm inheriting as a result of my father's death? So inciting incidents and intrusions are really important and very important for the playwright to know about and know how to use them in order to jumpstart the action of the play and to get the audience engaged in the narrative. I'm going to shift now to element 6, the rising action, complications, plot, and crisis. And again, all those elements work together. And if you look in your handout, your graphic, you'll see there's a diagonal arrow going from lower left to upper right. And that's the plot, the rising action, the complications. So if you follow the graphic, you'll see the protagonist is safe and sound in the old world order on the left. There's some kind of lightning bolt, the intrusion or the initiating incident, which brings the major dramatic question and gives the protagonist a goal. And as the plot unfolds, a set of complications occur as the hero is pursuing the goal, which get in the hero's way and could potentially derail him or her and prevent the hero from achieving the goal. So rising action is a series of questions or actions that lead from the original dramatic question. All these questions are related to the major dramatic question itself. Typically, a series of events take place during which the protagonist is getting closer or further to or from his or her goal. And if the goal of Dorothy is to get back to Kansas, there's a variety of different things that happen, which it would appear in the audience's mind to be either helping her or hindering her as she moves towards the goal of getting back to Kansas. As the play progresses, the complications which are going to prevent the protagonist from achieving his or her goal should get progressively serious, and the stakes for the protagonist get higher, and this is called escalation. One way to think about this, and this actually comes from a play called The Little Dog Laughed, is that in the first act, the protagonist gets into a tree. In the second act, people begin to throw rocks at the protagonist while he's in the tree. And in the third act, the protagonist gets out of the tree. Now, crisis occurs right before the major dramatic question is resolved. Before the protagonist is able to resolve the major dramatic question, before we find out whether or not the protagonist will achieve the goal, the protagonist hits the biggest obstacle of all, the crisis. So the audience should feel, as a result of the crisis, that it's going to be impossible for the protagonist to achieve his or her goal. And the crisis usually occurs about 3/4 of the way through the narrative. Once the crisis happens, if the crisis is well constructed, the audience will feel that things can never go back to the way they were before. Some kind of point of no return has been reached. And in the course of the crisis, the protagonist often has to face his or her greatest fear. So those are elements 6, rising action, complications, plot, and crisis. So the final element is what I call, I'm going to call it the climax. It's basically resolving the dramatic question in a way that satisfies. And my mentor in graduate school called it the perception shift. So the perception shift is the realization of the ultimate reality of the play. And a perception shift creates a satisfying conclusion to the dramatic question for the audience. If you look at your graphic, you'll see in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little chevron which says decision. So at this point in the narrative, the hero makes a decision, which causes the dramatic question to be resolved. We know for sure whether or not the hero is going to achieve the goal. So in The Wizard of Oz, the crisis is when the wizard floats away in the balloon without her. So it looked like she was for sure going to get home, and then she's not. So something appears to be broken in a way that it can never be fixed for her. So against all odds, Glinda appears. That turns out that the ruby red slippers have the power to take her back to Kansas. She's had that power all along. She didn't know she had it. And now she has to make a decision. Because over the course of her adventure in Oz, she's actually found a lot of love and support there with her friends, the Scarecrow, the Cowardly Lion, and the Tin Woodman. So if she goes back to Kansas, she's going to have to leave all that behind. So she has to make a decision, which, of course, she makes. The decision is to go back to Kansas. And as a result of going back to Kansas, she discovers the ultimate truth of the narrative, which is there really is no place like home. All those things that she found in Oz with her the funny friends are waiting for her back in Kansas. But in order for her to know that, she had to go back and find out. So the decision is to go back to Kansas. And it's there that we realize that that's the answer to the major dramatic question. And the perception shift is that Kansas is actually a pretty good place after all, which Dorothy was not necessarily prepared for. So at the end of the narrative, as a result of the way the dramatic question is answered, the audience perceives a new idea, a different idea, and yet somehow an idea that's always existed throughout. And to a certain extent, we always knew that Dorothy was loved in Kansas, which is why she wanted to go back there so badly. And yet the new idea represents a perception shift. The ultimate reality is what the play or the narrative is about. And the ultimate reality was always present in some way at the beginning of the story. So when the audience arrives at the apparent new place, they should say, well, this is the only possible answer. It's a perceived change, not an actual change, which is why it's called a perception shift. So the playwright has, during the course of the play, created a conflict between what appeared to be and what actually is. And the resolution of that conflict should satisfy. And the audience should go, well, now I see. The resolution should both be surprising and yet inevitable. And perception shifts can be big or small. So those, my friends, are the seven key elements of narrative that make storytelling effective. And I'm just going to quickly review them one more time. Element number one is the protagonist. Who is the protagonist? The protagonist should have a goal. And whether the protagonist achieves that goal or not is the major dramatic question. At the beginning of the play, the protagonist exists at a certain consciousness level, which we call the old world order. At the end of the play, the protagonist usually has a new consciousness, which is the new world order. The major dramatic question is usually introduced by an inciting incident or an intrusion, which is then followed by rising action, complications, or the plot as the protagonist pursues the goal, as we're on our way to answering that major dramatic question. And then finally, at the end of the play is a crisis where the worst thing that could happen happens. A decision is made. And as a result of that, we have a climax where things are resolved. And ideally, there is a perception shift where we get to experience a different kind of reality as a result of everything that's happened to us over the course of the story. So those are the seven key elements of narrative. Again, these elements of narrative were all described in more detail in your handout, along with a graphic that shows how they all tie together. And if you want to look on page 8 of your handout, you're going to see your assignments. So I'm going to give you some assignments that are going to allow you to apply the key elements of narrative. If you have a playwright's journal, this is a great place to put notes. So you may want to get one if you don't have one already. So I'm going to ask you in your playwright's journal to take your favorite play or musical. You know, mine is actually The Music Man, my favorite musical. And I'd say I love The Crucible. It's one of my favorite plays. So I'm going to ask you to see if you can identify the seven key elements of structure in whatever play or musical you have chosen. And I'm going to say, just in general, musicals have stronger structures often than plays do, because they appeal to a wider audience and narratives have to be tighter in musicals. So who's the protagonist of your favorite play or musical? What's the major dramatic question, which probably relates to the protagonist's goal? Is there an onstage manifestation of that goal that's described in the play or the musical, and what is it? How is the world as experienced by the protagonist of the piece different at the beginning and the end of the narrative? What's happened to the protagonist over the course of the story? And then what does that say about the theme? I'm going to ask you to think about the complications that the protagonist experiences in pursuit of the goal. What's the crisis? What happens at the end that's the worst complication of all? How does the major dramatic question resolve for the protagonist? Does the protagonist achieve his goal or her goal? And then what does this tell us about the theme of the play? So then what I'm going to ask you to do is to take a play that you are working on and see if you can begin to answer the questions about structure with respect to your own play. And it may very well be that answering these questions about your play gives you some ideas about some changes or improvements you might need to make to improve the quality of your narrative. So this is Andy Black. This is The Play's the Thing. Podcast 3 in a series of podcasts. Again, I want to thank the series sponsor, Play Submissions Helper. They are a terrific partner to playwrights as we try to get our work out there. I want to thank them for their participation in this experience. And I want to let you know that the next podcast is going to do a deep dive on the concept of the protagonist. And we're actually going to look at some of the common challenges that playwrights have when they develop their protagonists and certain things they might be able to do to improve the situation for their protagonist in service of making their narrative stronger. So this is Andy Black saying thanks for listening and keep writing, and we'll see you again next time. Bye for now.